Yes. Good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol. It is Cinco de Mayo for our regularly scheduled one day later than normal commission meeting. I call this meeting to order. So, it's been a busy couple of days. I've hardly seen you guys around. We've all been off doing our own things. I just wanted to make a couple comments for starters. First, in terms of the budget, obviously the governor came out with his budget recommendations yesterday for 90% budgets. This was actually what I was expecting, and so it wasn't a huge shock from my perspective. And it's also something that we have started looking at and planning for even after just the cutback. So we will be very thoughtful in this. It isn't a rush. We're going to be thoughtful and make a proposal that we think is right for the commission that allows us to maintain the services that are a top priority at a high level of service for the public, and also within what is affordable to the state. And that's just, I appreciate the fact that we have this balanced budget requirement, and I think it really provides for good service for the people of the state, and it will focus our attention on really prioritizing what we do and making sure that we're using the resources that are available for the best outcome for the public and for what we're required to do. So I look forward to working with my colleagues on that. We're going to have meetings moving from now until when we solve it and come up with our position, and I think it'll be a productive time, and we'll be working closely with staff as well and getting their input too. So that's all I have to say about the budget. Secondly, I did want to talk briefly about the Xcel Energy outages that have been occurring over the last week. Have had a lot of conversation with the company. The company's here today as well. And I know that the company has its full attention focused on this. I've heard from high-level folks, even all the way up to the CEO, on the issue. And so they're well aware of what's going on and focusing their attention and resources on fixing it, the issues. I think that it's important to note a couple things. First of all, the causes of the interruptions. Two of them were underground cable. One of them was a vegetation management issue. Those three are issues that we know can be addressed. The squirrel, the lightning strike, that's just part of receiving power and having it vulnerable to natural causes. And that's the company can't avoid those things. And so we're really focusing in on those two issues that we know can be avoided, the underground cable, and the vegetation management, and the company has been focusing on these issues already, dating back a number of years. And so we will be scheduling a meeting with the company during the admin portion of today's meeting to really provide a good time for us to focus in on some of those key issues. It is important to note that the commission has been working with Xcel for a number of years on this specific issue and has four very good tools in place already to address specifically reliability in the Red River Valley. Those tools include the hiring of a full-time engineer dedicated to that area, and they recently just got a new person for that position who brings to the table more experience with the company, and I think we'll really be focusing in on some of the issues that we're seeing here today. Secondly, they have a plan for replacing this underground cable that is unjacketed and older, up to 40 years old. This cable is, and they know it's prone to problems. It's very expensive to replace. It's why they haven't taken it all out and replaced it all at once. We've been trying to work with the company in a measured approach that allows them to do that while also not, you know, really driving up costs in one fell swoop. So we'll be looking at that and seeing what's available for accelerating that process and what the benefits would be. Vegetation management, we talked about. They have an accelerated vegetation management program. company customers are a key piece of this program and need to be cooperative with the company on the controlling of that vegetation, allowing them access and accessibility to those trees for trimming. So that's an important component, and that was the longest outage. The four-hour outage was caused by a tree, tree branch. So that's another important piece. Another one is the installation of these Intelliruptors. It's the only place where, or the first place that Xcel has installed these. 25 of these Intelliruptors have been installed in the Fargo system. They helped redirect traffic on the feeder system to areas that aren't part of the outage. So if a feeder line gets experiences an outage, any customers that can be redirected to a different feeder for their power are done. That's done. Well, in this last case, the batteries on two of these Intelliruptors weren't working. So this is a learning curve for the company. They now know this is a big issue. Their engineer will be focusing on this and how to get the best use out of that system and make sure that it's working as efficiently as possible. If it had been working as efficiently as possible or effectively in this last time, there would have been 1,100 customers that would have seen less of a loss of power during the last week. So we know that that's an easy area to improve. And finally, they have this performance rate plan in place where if the average customer outage is less than 57 minutes, the company gets rewarded up to $1.5 million. And if they're over that, then they pay customers who have three or more outages a year a $50 rebate. The company has yet to get the reward. They've paid out the rebates the last 3 years. And so I continue to believe that that's a good program. It was negotiated in a previous rate agreement. And as all rate agreements are, there are negotiations about revenues for the company. So rather than just giving the revenue to the company up front, the commission at the time negotiated performance in exchange for revenue. So until they meet the performance, they don't get the revenue. And so that was a smart tool that I believe Commissioner Kalk was part of negotiating in the company's rate case in 2010. Hopefully the company will continue working towards achieving that reliability performance and then if they do gain that additional revenue. So it's an ongoing process, something the commission is working hard on with the company, and I'm confident that, you know, there's a lot of good tools in place that we will see this turn the corner here in the not too distant future, and I'm hopeful that that can be sooner versus later. So that concludes my opening comments. I'll turn over to Commissioner Crispin.
Thank you. I had one of the maybe most more fascinating days of the 3+ years I've been at the commission on Tuesday when Assistant Secretary of the Interior Janice Schneider was here and we were up at the Freedom Mine, Coteau, north of Beulah, and the entire congressional delegation was there, and this was a meeting that really got started at the very strong request or suggestion of Senator Hoven at a budget meeting some time ago, and the subject had to do with the stream protection rule that the Office of Surface Mining is looking at imposing, and they've left a very short window for comments. I can't remember if it was 60 or 90 days, and this thing is massive. I would say to North Dakota's coal electric generation, this is similar in magnitude of a problem to the Clean Power Plan to these folks. That's how big of a deal this is, and they had this very short window to look at it. And the rule has to do with ephemeral and intermittent streams, and is I think everyone agrees, designed to meet a problem in the Appalachian region of the country that really is much different here and not really a problem. So we were up there, and in the discussion before we went out on the tour, it was interesting. We also talked quite a bit about the federal leases that also come from the Department of the Interior. And in North Dakota's case, these leases have to do with federally owned coal, but it's privately owned surface. So as they get to these, and there are several that are starting to work around federally owned coal, the taxpayers, both of the federal government and some of that then is shared with state and local governments, the taxpayers will lose in that they don't get these mineral dollars, but environmentally it's actually a negative because the ground still gets churned up. They use it for ponds and roads and everything else because they have the surface lease. It's just that the minerals are left behind, and environmentally it's actually a negative because then instead of taking the closest coal that doesn't have to be hauled far, they go get some from elsewhere that's obviously further away since it was their second choice. So it's actually an environmental negative. And anyway, in that discussion, it turns out that when some of the current lease requests were put in, the presumption at the time was that these are 18 to 24-month processes to file and approve a mineral lease, and some of them have gone on over 7 years now already. And so in this discussion, Congressman Kramer, I thought, maybe had the line of the day, and you could see the wisdom he gained from almost a decade here at the Public Service Commission when he pointed out to the secretary that they have this unwillingness to reopen the comment period on the stream protection rule that was 60 or 90 days, and just obviously too short of a time to process the legal and environmental consequences of this rule nationwide and get comments in. They're unwilling to open that for more than the 60 or 90 day original period, but 7 years to process a lease application is nothing. That's too short of a time. And Kevin pointed out, it's really why you see people from both parties in the primaries unwilling to have trust in government. You know, and I mean, what better example of it can there be? So really was probably the line of the day. Regarding the stream protection rule itself, we went out on site then and looked at a place with both ephemeral and intermittent stream altogether. This was about 100 yards long, so similar to a football field. Very saline, poor quality. And then we went to one that was similar and has now been reclaimed. And so this water source had to be replaced since it was there, even though it was poor quality. It's now been replaced with a quality livestock water source. And the grass is now good grass instead of the saline. So it's actually an environmental benefit that they didn't go around it, as well as an economic benefit, both which would be lost under the stream protection rule, sadly. And so I think that was very useful. And I think the Assistant Secretary of the Interior really gained a lot of knowledge through this process, and that it was, in fact, quite a useful day. One of the other highlights was, in much of the discussion, I almost forgot this, and it's probably the most important point, some of the mining companies mentioned things that they've since learned that they wish they had commented on, but they just didn't know at the time of the deadline. And of the 94,000 comments that they did receive, some of these things were mentioned in one set of comments, and those were the ones from Jim Deitch and his team in our reclamation department. The comments from our team were highlighted a number of times throughout the day. It was just almost unbelievable. But I guess I've worked with these people long enough to where it's easy for me to believe. But I think for the rest of the room, it seemed unbelievable how on top of this we were with this very short comment period.
It's great. Thank you, Andy. Thanks for doing that. It was really important to have you with your experience in coal country, your holding of that portfolio, and your understanding of that industry along on that tour to represent the leadership here at the commission. And I was really felt good about you being part of it and was glad you were there. And I also want to send my appreciation to Jim and his folks for just their unbelievable professionalism and seriousness with which you've done your jobs all these years. I was really proud to sit with Janice Schneider and tell her it's not a surprise that these comments are so thorough and thoughtful, because these folks have devoted their whole career to this, and you ought to be listening to them. These people should be writing the rule first and then you guys should be adapting it because they know what's going on. They've spent their whole lives doing this, and that matters, and that's how you get good government. And I hope she walked away and was serious in her comments and intentions to make changes to that rule to adapt it to what should be occurring in North Dakota. So I wanted to make three quick corrections to my comments or additions to my comments on the XL Energy piece. First of all, it's more than three outages, so four or more outages, customers get credited. Four or more outages. So I want to make sure I've misspoken that twice now. So make sure the media get that correction from me. And the company is going through the system using infrared technology to scan the above ground system in Fargo. That's one of the immediate responses to the last few outages, and they're looking at accelerating their replacement of the underground cable. So those are some of the immediate actions that the company is taking that I failed to mention too. So, all right, with that, Commissioner Kalk, welcome back from your SPP and FERC dealings, and thanks for having taking on that whole portfolio of complicated work on behalf of North Dakota ratepayers.
We have America.
Yeah. If I could, Madam Chair, I believe it was your point about the fourth outage. I think they have to be more than 5 minutes in duration, too. Isn't that correct,
yes,
Mark? So it's the fourth outage that's more than 5 minutes in duration.
Yep.
So it's not just the sorry, but the to your point about yesterday, I was in front of the FERC in D.C. late afternoon on some transmission issues that are involving Otter Tail Power, Southwest Power Pool, Central Power, Missouri River Energy. And it's very complicated stuff we're working through, but it highlights the fact that, you know, Randy is out there doing the work with the coal to make sure we get the right generation needs. I'm out there talking about transmission, that we build the right transmission, the cost is allocated. You're working with Excel to make sure the distribution system is put into place and it all operates correctly, because it takes all three pieces to make it all work together, and it's very important. And I think oftentimes the customers get so used to everything being working all the time that when they have these disruptions, they're just not used to it. So we got to keep doing what we're doing, but it's a very complex energy system. So that went, I don't know that I would say it went well yesterday. It's a process, and I'll brief my colleagues on that at a separate time, but these transmission issues with Southwest Power Pool and MISO and North Dakota sitting in the seams are becoming very complicated with the different jurisdictions and the costs that may follow. So, Dave, the year of the power line continues. So just a note for everyone else that's listening, too, we're getting closer to MARC conference, June 12th to the 15th. Yesterday we had Mrs. Schneider up here, but we also have Undersecretary for Fossil Fuels, Clean Coal, David Moeller, is going to be up here for the MARC conference. And he's coming up here to provide comments to the MARC commissioners as well as anybody else who's there. But also we're going to take him out on a tour and have him look at Great River Energy's dry finding. He's going to go look at the alum cycle and also look at some of the work that North Dakota has done in remediation. So just the way it worked out, we have several senior folks coming in North Dakota to kind of see what's going on. And I do sense some, what's the word I'm looking for? There's a opening up of some of the folks that have been anti-coal for so long that they're coming out to actually see what goes on, to look at the land after it's been mined, to look at the new technologies that are being researched, and we'll see where it goes. So I think it's good that these people are coming out. And lastly, not dealing with the PSC, but my colleagues, I'll just share this. For some reason today, I was thinking of Cinco de Mayo, and I was thinking of Shyla Schaefer, because she was always excited. She always had this thing was one of her favorite days. And I remember the last time I visited with her, I said, "Geez, Shyla, you look great." And she said, "Well, you haven't seen me naked." So I put that out there, that people like her just make life good, and lifelong commitment to North Dakota, and just thinking of her today.
That wasn't the response you were expecting.
It's very seldom am I embarrassed and speechless, but I was both at that time.
Oh, and now I am. Oh, that's funny.
From a 90-something-year-old lady.
For the reporters in the room, I think you have a copy, too, of the comparison of XL outages to MDU and Otter Tail, and that provides a broader context to view all this stuff in as well, because it does point out that they're right in line and aren't extremely different in terms of their outage history for customers. So, All right. We have a number of items on the consent agenda. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved.
Okay, thank you, Alana. Moving on to the regular agenda. My first motion, I move the commission adopt the third amended filing of fact conclusion of law and order in Highland Crude LLC, Crude Oil Pipeline McKenzie Williams Montreal Siting Application, case number PU-13-136.
Second.
This is an application that Highland submitted to the PSC. It's very straightforward. What it does is it changes the certification document that they signed on their original permit to the more updated certification document that eliminates the requirement that the company come back to us if they want to make an addition to this, the corridor. As long as it's staying within the corridor, they're entitled under state law to go ahead and construct another line within that without going through the permitting process. And so the revised certification document spells that out and now is officially, after this motion passes today, part of this order and gets added to the order in its entirety, so everything else is repeated in the order, even things that have already been completed. So this just updates the certification document.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing
one,
none.
One thing I wanted to point out, but I lost my page in the order here. I think you just highlighted it in your comments, but you mentioned that the things that have already been done are included in here again, and the very last point in the order was about them writing a letter to the landowners. That's just a repeat of
the whole
previous
thing. Right.
Order, I presume.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank
it's
you.
Just attached to the attachment is updated to the original order. So.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved.
Thank you, Lana. JF2, I move the commission adopt the order on amending certificate and permit in Bakken Oil Express LLC Dickinson Bypass Reroute Stark Siting Application case number PU-16-95.
Second.
In February, Bakken Oil Express filed a request to amend their route permit and corridor certificate for a 38-mile, 16-inch crude oil pipeline in Dunn and Stark, North Dakota. This pipeline was permitted in 2014 and has already been constructed. And this is a reroute of that pipeline that is approximately 0.7 miles long and 275 to the east of its current location. And the purpose of the reroute is to accommodate construction of the Dickinson Bypass by North Dakota DOT. We sent a notice of opportunity for hearing requiring comments or requests for hearing by April 22nd, and we have received none, no such requests or comments. The reroute doesn't include impact any exclusion or avoidance areas, and the State Historic Preservation Office has concluded that it doesn't affect any historic properties. So I think this motion is in order and good to go.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, I'll signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion's approved.
And JF3, I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings at public hearing in Plains Terminal, North Dakota, LLC, 24-inch crude oil pipeline, McKenzie County, application case number PU-16-140.
Second.
A public hearing on the application in case number PU-16-140 is scheduled for June 27th. At 11 a.m. at Teddy's Residential Suites in Watford City. Plains Terminal, North Dakota has filed applications for a corridor compatibility and route permit for a 3.5 mile, 24 inch diameter bidirectional crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in McKenzie County. This is a connection point between the Plains Pipeline Johnson Corner to the Dakota Access Pipeline in that same area. So the Plains-Johnson Corner Terminal It will connect and move northwest to Dakota Access, Johnson Corner Terminal. The pipeline will have the capacity for 150,000 barrels per day. Normal throughput will be 50,000 barrels per day. They anticipate a two-month construction schedule. Pending a permit and approval by the commission, they'd like to have this operational by late 2016, and the project is approximately $5 million. So this is another example of the filling in of the infrastructure, the pipeline infrastructure, to further reduce truck traffic and create greater efficiencies in North Dakota's pipeline infrastructure.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just a question for my colleagues. I didn't have this on my schedule, which is fine. Where I looked and it works out fine, but just make sure
I'm not sure how that happened.
It's a substantive ALJ.
Okay.
Oh, that's how that happened.
All right. That's fine. I missed that somewhere until.
So we won't be attending this. That's right. I remember this now. Thanks for the reminder, Julie.
Does that have
Yeah, to because be of the length and the staff review of the proposal not being real complicated.
Well, no, I agree.
That a substantive ALJ was in order for this.
And that doesn't have to be said anywhere in the announcement?
I don't believe so. I guess I did notice it in the file because we made that request to the ALJ's office, and I just kind of didn't register until just now. That's what that was for, substantive ALJ.
Fair enough.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
I hate to miss a hearing just because I'm somewhere else.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Okay, RC1, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation. Mid-Continent Communications, designated eligible carrier, application case number PU-16-48.
Second.
Mid-Continent filed an application to be designated as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers under 47 CFR Part 54 Subpart E. That designation is also known as the Lifeline Only ETC designation. On February 10th, the Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until March 25th for comments and requests for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were received. The notice stated that we can determine this matter without a formal hearing. And based on the evidence in this proceeding, Mid-Continent is qualified for designation as an ETC eligible to receive federal universal service support. The certification relating to order provisions is incorporated by reference and attached to the order. It is in the public interest that Mid-Continent be designated as an ETC in the service area requested, and the service area includes 29 rural exchanges, and I can list them off, but I don't think it's really necessary, but they're all rural exchanges, and the provision of adequate essential and non-essential telecommunication service in these exchanges, I think, will be facilitated and supported by the full current technical and financial capabilities of Mid-Continent.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved.
In RC2, I move the Commission schedule a formal hearing on the decision to approve revision number 27 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK-9503 held by the Falkirk Mining Company.
Second.
On April 5th, the Commission approved revision number 27 to a permit held by Falkirk Mining. This approval was subject, though, to the right of any person that is or may be adversely affected by the decision to request a formal hearing in the matter. On May 4th, we received a timely request for a formal hearing from the attorney for Mr. Robert Nelson, the owner of some land that is near the permit area. Based on past discussions that Mr. Nelson has had with the Reclamation Division staff member, it appears that he is concerned about discharges from ponds that Falkirk has constructed upstream of his property. the formal hearing provisions in the reclamation law require that the hearing be held within 30 days of the receipt of a formal hearing request, and again, that request came in on May 4th. These provisions also require that the notice of formal hearing be published in newspapers at least once a week for two consecutive weeks prior to the hearing. So therefore, the hearing needs to be scheduled as soon as possible, and we have a very tight window in order to follow the law. The date of the hearing, I think, will be determined during the administration portion of today's meeting.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion's approved.
And that concludes my agenda.
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Kalk, you have one item on the agenda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I still am a little disappointed, though, in Commissioner Crispin. I thought he'd give me some rural North Dakota history on the Mid-Continent Exchange, so maybe perhaps you could have some of that for next week. Because you know what Botno was in there? I thought maybe you'd give me some Botno history.
Maybe you want to provide that.
We don't have that kind of time today. All right. Item BK1. I move the Commission adopt the consent order in Public Service Commission North Country Contracting, LLC, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15669.
Second.
Thank you. On September of last year, the Commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Mid-Continent Communication. The complaint alleged a violation by North Country Contracting, which is a company based out of Dickinson, North Dakota. And Mid-Continent, of course, is a company that is authorized to do business in North Dakota. Basically, when staff dug into the complaint, upon onwards, right, they concluded that on June 17th of last year, NCC personnel provided an excavation notice to North Dakota One Call for work to begin on June 19th at the intersection of 27th Avenue West and 32nd Street West in Williston, North Dakota. The ticket was good up until July 10th. So June 17th, they provided the notice for work to begin after June 19th. The ticket was good till July 10th of 2015. However, based on the investigation, staff concluded that on September 10th, NCC began an excavation as defined in North Dakota Century Code, and basically it was 62 days after the ticket had expired. The company, NCC, damaged a 3/4-inch coax cable belonging to Mid-Continent with approximately $2,000 worth of damages. 12 customers lost service. No agreement was made between the company and the excavator. It was not being made in time of emergency. The company, North Country Contracting, signs a consent order basically waiving all their rights, and the fine today is be $1,000 for violation of the appropriate portion of the Century Code to be paid immediately to the general fund. So appreciate Victor and staff's work on this, and first-time violator. Luckily, no one was injured, but we had customers lose service, so you never know what kind of critical things can be going down those wires. Everything seems to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved.
Concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Excellent.
Madam Chair, before I close out, if I could just add one thing. We did Botno trivia not so long ago on an elevator case.
I know, but it's...
But looking through this list, I'm just going to pick one out off the top of my head here because this is one of my favorite stories, and we don't get to talk about Fairmount, North Dakota very often.
Not nearly enough.
Fairmount, down in the very southeast corner of the state, has, I think, one of the more clever little phrases for their community, where the sun shines first in North Dakota, because as the sun comes up, of course, and they're off extended east farther. And I always thought that was clever, and although she laughed it off and refused to take credit, other friends down in that area have told me that that slogan came from the clever mind of one Yolanda Luick, the wife of State Senator Larry Luick. So
really?
Very good.
That's what I heard.
That's fun. I'm waiting for the day when you get to talk about Daisy, because that's one of my favorite town names in North Dakota. All right, that concludes our regular agenda. We will take some questions from the audience, and then we'll close out for a brief time to sign and get back together for the admin portion of the meeting. But any questions from you all?
Just to refresh, is XL the only
Yes, they're the only utility with that reliability rate plan, reliability RPP, reliability performance plan.
Maybe this is a question for Mark, but the fourth outage of more than 5 minutes, has that threshold been met this year?
It does not appear to have been met for this year, and the way those
the outages, same customers
right
must be affected.
But we do have customers from 2015 that will be seeing bill credits starting later this month, or might already be starting as we speak. So there is a year delay.
Oh, okay.
Well, a few months.
Yeah.
Not really a year.
Calendar is based on a calendar year being paid in May of the following year.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are going to be their credits on their
bill.
Okay.
Yes.
It's not checks.
Oh, that's good. That's a good point, Mark. So people will start seeing those in May from last year, and it's probably important that they realize that's for last year, not the ones that just occurred.
We're well on our way this year.
We would hope to stem that.
The underground cable, can you tell us how much the objective was, how much there is, how much has been replaced, and how much you plan to replace in the future?
I think we'll have the opportunity to present that to a commission at a future meeting. We have people gathering all that information. We're going to update it. We have been embarking on that replacement for the last 3 years, but we will give the commission an update.
Looking through your plan here, looks like you're going to spend, or you plan to spend, $1.8 million this year on the underground.
Yes, that had been in the plan. Potentially, we are going to discuss to see if that figure needs to be adjusted.
You don't know what the overall cost is to replace that entire four-year-old line?
No, I don't have that at this time.
And you don't know how long?
Well, I do know we had probably a five-year place and plan to do it, but we are reevaluating whether that is sufficient.
It's, James, it's not a single line. It's lines. It's not just like one long line underground throughout
a
good...
It's a distribution system is what it is, not a specific corridor.
Okay. Same thing with the overhead line upgrade.
The overhead lines, that's where the work with to check to see with the infrared camera to see if we have weaknesses there. That's a tool that we can use to evaluate that.
And the longest of these outages on April 26th, when an overhead feeder came into contact with a tree, was that an area that had been trimmed, or where did you guys not get permission from the landowner?
Yeah, it had been trimmed, but maybe not as severely. There's a balance between trimming it far enough away so it doesn't grow back if you have moist years, but we'll go back and review it. There is no indication that tree trimmers did not perform there, but it was apparent that that had been part of the cause.
Is that an issue with these outages, getting permission from homeowners to go onto the property?
I would say most homeowners are pretty good. We've been very successful with that. It's an emotional issue, so we take their feelings into account, but and try to do a nice job. We do have professional arborists on the people that do the tree trimming. So I think we've actually reduced the number of people that have complaints about that tree trimming efforts.
If I could just chime in on that comment. A few years ago, we worked with Excel, and they doubled down on their tree trimming. You guys put extra crews on, and you know, we were having trouble with outages. So we asked them, and they complied with, you know, getting more of the trees cut back, because that was the factor it was all pointing to. But they went out and did a really nice job of cutting back the trees, but then the phone started ringing with complaints about people cutting down their trees. So you can't have it both ways. I mean, the outages come from a lot of different sources, but one is you get trees and wind and you have outages. And so when the company comes through and cuts them back, you know, they can cut it back 6 inches or go back to 3-4 feet. It's better for the reliability of the grid if they cut them back. But people get upset about that. So when we did that before, we got an earful on both sides of that. So these are one of those things I think that people have to understand. There's consequences for everything. Do you want to have the reliability all the time, or do you want to have the beautiful trees in the front yard? It's a tough call, but I think that reliability is probably going to trump out.
And as part of this rate case, I'm looking at a story we did from 2012, you agreed to hire a tree trimming crew. Have they been working annually? Is there a...
Yes, they have been working annually, and so we've increased that. So we were on that enhanced schedule completely as of 2015. So we've achieved that equilibrium now, where we believe we should be able to continue on that course.
Stacy, do you want to grab him a mic?
How about a problem?
I want to grab a mic, Mark.
The commissioner talked about squirrels. We have actually put animal protection up to the point we believe that we're almost at the level where it's a rarity when it happens. So we do have vinyl protectors, but eventually they can still, if they end up in the right place or if they're cavorting or whatever it is. But we actually do have records of scaling back those animal outages fairly dramatically over the last 15 years.
One of the things that, you know, Mark talked about, and you talked about, Jim, about the rate case of 2012, one of the things that continues to be perplexing is the Fargo system seems to not be performing as well as their system in Grand Forks and Minot. And so trying to figure out what is the root cause of some of the challenges in Fargo that we don't see in Grand Forks and Minot, that's where we directed the extra tree trimming, the 25 IntelliTeam switches, which have worked well in other outages. This time they didn't. And also the additional engineer to go through and look at what needs to be replaced, because I don't know, and this is just truly off the cuff, but, you know, the long flooding situations we have in there, the a lot of growing in the city, there's something that's challenging in the Fargo system that I think causes these outages to happen. So that's where you got to stay in the fight every day in these things.
Yeah, and even today we'll pull our engineering team together, start evaluating, and really focusing in on some of the questions you asked. What would be the cost to accelerate it? How soon could we have it done? How much of this 500 MCM cable is left on our system?
Might we know that today?
No, I would say you wouldn't have that yet today.
And these same safeguards... It's only the Fargo area, or West Fargo, or Red River?
No, we focus on our whole system, but as Commissioner Kalk said, we seem to be ahead of the curve in Grand Forks and Minot. We've had pretty solid reliability. We're never satisfied. We can always improve it. We continue to work in those jurisdictions as well.
XL's in 8 states?
Yes.
Do you have this similar problems, or is this the worst?
And again, I would go back to the idea that our overall reliability is solid, still much better than the national average. But when we see specific customers impacted by repeat outages, we feel honor-bound to jump into it, see if we can't solve that issue. So overall, we take great pride in our reliability.
Right, my question is, is Fargo worse than throughout your entire 8-state region?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that it's a thriving, growing community. It's very noticeable when we have an outage, but our employees there work hard and take great pride in what they're doing.
The last time we looked at numbers, all of North Dakota was better than the majority of Minnesota. Fargo is not. When you look at their numbers, the last time we looked at them, Fargo performs very, very well compared to some of the systems in Minnesota. It's just our challenge in North Dakota, it's Fargo. And then, you know, I keep going off my soapbox here, but there's a flip side to this, too, is if customers have grown so used to having 100% electricity, no one has backups power in place. We've had challenges with some of the businesses get really upset when they lose power, which I understand that. But if you've got systems that should be backed up with backup generation, you should have those in place. So you have to have a grid put into place that has generation, transmission, distribution. But if you've got critical systems, they should be on backup generation. So, I mean, we're going to keep working for it, but there's many pieces to this puzzle.
Homeowners
should use surge suppressors and do those kind of things too, which we're seeing, you know, very, very few people have surge suppressors anymore. So yes, homeowners are a different category than businesses, but the point is that we've become so good at keeping the power on that no one even thinks about it. Performance three.
Yes. Does Xcel have that in other states?
Not this specific plan. This was sat down, and we worked it through with the commission and felt that it provided both incentives plus the acknowledgement if we don't live up to what the customers are hoping to see for as far as reliability.
Well, if it's about equal throughout your system, and including North Dakota, why just Fargo?
Well, we would put this in place if there were multiple outages in any of our communities.
This applies to all customers, not yes. just Fargo customers. The reliability performance plan. Okay. Yes, that is all Xcel customers in North Dakota.
Tree trimmers in Minot? And
yes.
You do?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, of course.
Yep. Under contract, or are they?
Yeah, they're under contract. It is something that we've gone to those professional trimmers with the arborists on staff that do it all the time. Used to be a lineman doing it if we had spare time in between, and they did a good job. But the reality is there's enough going on, so we use their skills focusing on the electric system.
But the IntelliTeam switches are unique to Fargo.
Yes.
Because the last rate case, that was not part of the... Not the last rate case. That rate case, that was not part of the initial filing, what Xcel wanted. But we agreed to give them more revenues to install these switches to help cut down some of the outages in Fargo. We don't have those in Minot or Grand Forks. But we talked about how they perform in Fargo. Perhaps, if needed, they'd go to Grand Forks and Minot. But we haven't
seen
that.
We are leaning in that direction, that we're seeing some real value from those switches. It's a learning curve. We're understanding that the life of the batteries didn't quite live up to what we expected. It's something that we know we'll put an enhanced future on. We've seen some of the communications as, again, trees grow, they might not communicate the same. Mm-hmm. So we've seen some issues, but overall we do believe they've increased our reliability, got customers restored sooner than they would have been otherwise.
You had some figures to that effect, didn't you, Mark?
Yes, that the overall minutes last year would have been higher by 30% if those Intelleruptors in Fargo would have been higher by 30% if those Intelleruptors wouldn't have been in place. There were some technical challenges on putting them on the whole system, so the whole town isn't completed. But, again, that'll be part of our overall review. Would it make sense to have them on our whole system?
Or all the recent outages would have been 30% higher?
Nope, last year. I'm talking 2015. 2015. Yes. Yep. So to the extent that appears to have been a wise decision, we believe we can increase that once we fully have the system dialed in.
Do you have a percentage about how much the system is on that?
About half of the system, yes.
There was a targeted approach of where you put them on with some of the big feeder lines, right?
Yes.
In a couple of the areas that were impacted by the outages last week were not on the Intelleruptor system.
The first three outages did not have Intelleruptors in there. And
okay.
It goes a little bit to the backbone system, what was there, how easily would it adapt the Intelleruptors, would we have to bring in additional equipment. But now that we're seeing those Intelleruptors really are doing the job, we will take another look at broader utilization across the system, as well as Grand Forks and Minot.
In 2014, you missed your performance plan by a tenth of a minute. Who comes up with that formula? Is that you folks, or is that the
PSC? We set the parameters in the rate case of what would be counted, what wouldn't be counted. They file the information with our staff. Our staff reviews it. It's a negotiated beginning for the formula, and then we just have always applied it. And there was
it looked like it would be a real stretch to get there based on historical numbers, mm-hmm. But we got close and would. Are going to strive to get back to that number and hopefully exceed it.
Back to the one more comment on the reward there, because I've had a couple reporters ask about that, curiously, why the company should get more money if they meet that reward. And I think it's important to emphasize that back when that was negotiated, it was part of a broader rate negotiation. So you got less then in exchange for, if you perform, then you get more. So the options for the commission would have been just give you more what you were asking for at the time, or give it to you after you show us that you're going to improve your performance. And so it was in that mindset that that scheme was developed. So if they meet those standards, then they are justified in getting that additional revenue.
And I'm assuming that helps you pay for the infrastructure, the upgrades, that reward that you've invested.
Indeed, it would be part of that whole earnings package, as right. The commissioner said.
Anything else? All right. Thanks for the questions. Thank you, Mark. Normally, we'd have you guys go out to the hallway, but since it's something that we're all dealing with, I thought it was good to have the whole full discussion here. Any other questions on anything else? Nope. All righty. Then we will adjourn for 10 minutes to sign, or how long do you guys want? Five?
You seldom pay attention.
Let's say 11. Let's say 11 o'clock. We'll say 5 minutes because we don't have much to sign, do we, Esther? Okay. Thank you. Okay,